Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. When Anthony Gallagher started Pet Stop 30 years ago, dogs in Ireland were kept outside and got scraps. Now the dog, or the cat, or the fish is absolutely a member of the family. The 500 million euro plus pet market is three times the size of the baby market in Ireland. And globally, the pet sector is expected to reach 400 billion euro by 2030. That's bigger than the record, music or gaming industries. His career has spanned the graduate trainee program at Penny's to owning a deli store to being a retail consultant in London. While there, he was asked to do a study in the Irish pet food market, which led him to taking an Irish distribution contract for a vet-focused brand. And then he convinced fellow Sligo man Sean Melly and corporate high flyers Bernard Summers and Liam Booth to back him, and he opened five large format stores. Pet Stop was born. An ill-fated entry into online pet stores nearly sank the business, but a lucky exit gave him the ability to regroup, carry on, and 4 years later, come out the other side. Large format pet stores are now the focal point for the industry, and Pet Stop is ideally placed to continue to grow. Anthony, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Aidan, thanks very much. Delighted to be here today.
Great. Right. Where to start? Okay. You have had a very varied career in retail, starting from those days back in Penny's, all the way up to founding Pet Stop. What do you think are the three most important factors in successful retailing?
Well, I think, you know, the old adage, location, location, location. I mean, that is very, very true. And from, you know, my years working with Penny's or working in the deli business or with Pet Stop, you know, I can see that when we've gone to a location which had high footfall, good traffic, that really was the key. I mean, an example was we, after 2000, when we got into severe financial difficulty after the dot-com bust, which we had a deal done to sell that business for $42 million to a US company called Petopia. Unfortunately, in April 2000, the dot-com bust came and we were left without a seat and we'd invested over $5 million. We sold the leases on our premises to Carpetright, and then we moved across to a retail park in Blanchetown Shopping Centre, literally 500 metres from where we were. And it was like a desert. It was like, you know, something out of a Western where you've got the dust blowing down.
Tumbleweed running past the front door.
And we were there with a couple of small other retailers and just wasn't working. About 3 months later, Lidl bought the unit next door to us. The day after they opened, our sales went up by 50%. That day, 50%. Incredible. And then Argus opened literally maybe 6 months later, another 20%. So our sales effectively doubled just on the back of more footfall and other retailers in there with us to bring some people in. So the most important thing, I think, really is picking your locations correctly.
They say never work with children or animals. So what was it about the pet market that initially struck you as an opportunity?
I suppose the project I did for Quaker Oats and looking to do a study in the Irish pet food market is something I never, you know, we always had a dog at home when I was growing up, but exactly, dog lived mostly outside or in an outside room, you know, and they got fed scraps, you know, a little bit of pedigree chum from time to time. But in general, you know, he wasn't considered the sort of like the baby that he is today or that they are, dogs or cats or other animals. And I suppose when I looked at the pet food market after doing the study, I could see, okay, there's huge potential for growth here. And after running that pet food business, which was called Feebo, for about 5 years, I guess, you know, I said to myself, okay, I know about the pet food market now. I know about retailing. So if I use modern retailing techniques in the pet industry, and that's really what Pet Stop was born out of, was my knowledge of retailing from Penny's and my knowledge of the pet food market from Quaker Oats. And, you know, we were lucky. We got a good location day one in Leopardstown Retail Park, took off well. We then went to Coolock, that went well. And but the plan was always to sell it. It was never to be here in 30 years' time talking to you or anybody else. The plan was get in, get out, sell it, make some money and move on to the next thing. And then, you know, we looked at expanding around 1996. And, you know, I'd met Sean Melly. I knew Sean. Sean's family were from Sligo. And he had just done a deal with Bernard Summers and Ian Boot for TCL Telecom. And they were sort of looking for other investment opportunities. We had a chat. And, you know, the whole pet market was starting to expand then. Large format stores were happening in the US and happening in the UK. And PetSmart, which was, you know, is this probably the biggest pet retailer in the world still, had entered the UK market. It paid 2.7 times turnover for a company called Pet City. And we thought, okay, we wouldn't mind a piece of that. So the boys came on board. We opened, we got up to five stores. And we said, okay, well, look, let's look at, you know, a possible exit. And with that, PetSmart went back to the US with their tails between their legs. They lost a fortune in the UK market. So we now suddenly had a business that was not going to be, we couldn't sell it easily. It wasn't making any money. And we needed, you know, a different strategy. So we had just about the beginning of 1999, we just about got to break even. And then the dot-com arrived, and Pet was huge in dot-com. So we decided, okay, this is an opportunity. So we set up a company called PetMad.com. And, you know, we had millions of views, millions of, you know, eyeballs on the website. We bought up keywords across Europe. And, you know, we're looking to be a European distributor of pet products online. And we had the basic structure because we had the products, we had the website, we just had no traffic. Mm-hmm. But at that time, that wasn't the key. That wasn't the key problem. It wasn't about revenue. It was all about potential growth. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, the old adage, if you're losing money, you can't be measured, right? Yeah. So, I mean, like, how foolish was that? But anyway, within, you know, a couple of months, we had a number of offers. And one was for $42 million from Petopia.com, who are backed by Petco, a big US retailer. And then, as I said, you know, effectively the music stopped and we were left without a seat. And we had, you know, 5 million in it at that stage. And luckily, a fax came in to our store in Blanchardstown. Carbright were looking to expand. We're looking for outlets. We had five. So we did a deal with them to sell the stores for 1.2 million, the leaseholds. And that effectively, that plus myself and the other investors put more money in. So we were able to effectively do a deal with all the creditors. We paid everybody. Everybody got all of their money. I met them all and said, look, I'll give you half now and I'll give you half over the next 3 years. Everybody except for one company, a UK PR company, wouldn't do a deal with us and brought us to the High Court for PetMad, which had no assets, which was crazy. They didn't get any money, but everybody else got paid. So that was really, that's where we got then into survival mode and we literally dug ourselves out of a hole over the next 3 to 4 years.
Was it always your intention to be an entrepreneur in terms of starting a business when, or was it just that, you know, things collided, if fortune collided and you suddenly said, well, actually, I have a great idea and here's a business?
I always did kind of want to do my own thing. I always, from a young age, my original plan was to study international marketing in in NIHE in Limerick, as it was known then, University of Limerick. And I took a year off because we had no money. I was the youngest of 10 children from Sligo. And we had no money at home, so I needed to get some money. So I worked in France picking grapes and a couple of other jobs. And I came back in December 81. And, you know, I got a job working with Pennies in Sligo. We were just about to open a store, sweeping the floor. They needed somebody to sweep the floor. And a guy called Tim O'Keefe, who was the area controller for Pennies in Ireland at the time, liked me, saw I had a reasonable level of education, you know, but effectively liked me and thought I was smart enough. And they invited me onto their management training program. And that was the catalyst, really. And then I was in the retail business. And over the next number of years, you know, I I, you know, went up, rose up to the ranks pretty swiftly because, again, I met good people who coached me, who helped me along the way. And that really, you know, gave me a great insight. I mean, retail business, you know, there is no room for fools. You're either going to make it or you're not. You know, there's nowhere to hide.
Find you out very quickly.
Find you out very quickly. But having said that, I you know, I mixed with Arthur Ryan, Seamus Haffer, Paddy Pryor, some of the greatest retail minds in Europe, you know, who created Penny's Primark, you know, $10 billion company today, making $1 billion profit. You're one of the most successful retailers in the globe at the moment. And I worked with those guys. And again, it was a flat organization.
So you could literally knock on the door, come in and ask the questions.
Well, it was more, they were out on the shop floor.
Okay.
And they would say, okay, what's selling? What's moving? What's not moving? You know what I mean? And it was all quick, you know. And decisions were made quickly. If it wasn't working, okay, get rid of it. You know, let's get rid of out the door. You know what I mean? And it was great to see how fast-paced and how dynamic, you know, it was moving. And, you know, and also if you move something, you know, from a wall onto a front end, you could treble the sales. You know, I remember Penny's in Cardiff had a store, and it was a bit like where Penny's on Mary Street is and where Roach's stores used to be in Henry Street. And Penny's moved up the street, literally 500 metres. Their sales doubled. You know, so it is, none of it is rocket science, right? Yeah. But it is about doing the basics right and following the rules, you know.
The change in landscape of retail in general, the move online, the digital things like that, you know, what's your view on how retail has changed in the last decade?
I mean, it has. Like, our own business has changed fundamentally. Like, you know, 25% of our sales are online. We're the biggest online pet retailer in Ireland. We've been very successful. And that's down to the team, the team of people who work with me. I don't even have a laptop, okay? I don't even have a laptop. So that'll tell you how good I am, you know, with the digital transformation. But, you know, having said that, we've got great people work there. Most of the people, 95% of the people that work in Pet Stop and that have moved up to the ranks are people that came in on the floor working as part-timers. You know, Shirley Lynch, Suzanne McAvoy, who are with me 29 years, you know, since the business was formed. And have started off as part-time members of staff. One is a financial controller. One, you know, is the operations controller, controls all the stores and the buying, you know. And they have learned the business from the ground up and massively successfully so. But I think fundamentally, retail has changed and it hasn't. It's still the same. I go into stores and, you know, and I'm very disappointed because there's no stock. I was in New York last year. I was in Best Buy on Fifth Avenue. I wanted to buy, you know, a few bits for my son who's into gaming and computers. They had no stock in the store. I mean, it's like, buy it online. I mean, I'm in the store. This is Fifth Avenue, the prime retail estate globally, and I couldn't buy stock of them. You know, I've gone into other stores. They don't have the colours. They don't have the size. I mean, it's not rocket science, but if somebody's coming in and they can't buy what they want, what are they going to do? You know, and like, you look at the likes, Penny's, massively successful. They don't have an online presence. They've just started click and collect, but they have stock. You can go in and you're leaving with a bag full of goodies out of there.
I do think that, you know, to talk about moving online with retail, it misses the point that ultimately people buy from people, right? And, you know, and that's where the in-person thing. So if you have something in your store that people want to buy, you will sell it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the talk about retail now is experiential. And it is. It is. It is about, you're right, people do buy people. And we have, you know, the beauty about owning a dog or a cat is they're going to live for 12 years, maybe 14, 15, 16, right? And if we look after people when they come into our stores, if we give them a good experience, if we give them the benefit of our expertise, if we give them really good products that can help with the health and well-being of their pet and the enjoyment together, then, I mean, you know, they will come back into us. And we obviously have to give them value for money. That goes without saying. But people are prepared to spend, you know, a lot of money on their pets to look after them and to keep them healthy and happy. I mean, you know, I have two dogs myself, and I mean, when I get up in the morning, you know, my, you know, Bev, who's, you know, my son, says, I don't know why she's so obsessed with you, Dad, but she's sitting outside my bedroom door,
ready to go,
waiting for me. And then the tail starts wagging. I mean, you know, no matter who else it is, nobody's going to love you as much as a dog. That's,
that's
the truth.
When you started out the business, and I see this a lot, you know, with entrepreneurs, they think they need to be good at every part of the management role to do it, right? Whereas the really clever ones go, okay, well, I'm very good at the retailing bit, but I need somebody for the financial, I need somebody for a bit. So when you started up, where were you on that? Did you recognize that?
I mean, the great thing about working in Penny's was, you know, you know, at about 20 years of age, I was running a store with maybe 100 staff. At about when I left, I was running a number of stores, and you know, we could have had 300 or 400 staff. So you couldn't do it all yourself. It was all about delegation. And also, it was all about bringing on the next people that were under you. The way when I started off, I knew nothing. And, you know, my managers and the people who were, you know, the directors, said they brought me on. They taught me how to be a good retailer, I hope. And, you know, and it is all, so the great thing about working in an organization like Penny's, you learn how to delegate, right? And, you know, I had a reasonable eye for detail on the shop floor. I knew how to move products around, what would sell, what wouldn't sell. If it didn't, what to do about it, you know, what actions to take. But, you know, but certainly on the financial and on the sort of whole digital side of things, I knew that that wasn't my core strength. So I was always good at delegating and always good, I think, at spotting people that were hungry, that were resilient, that would work through problems. Because, you know, every day you get up, and it's not that we have any problems in our business. I just look at them as opportunities. Something goes wrong, grand, let's fix it. Let's do it better. Let's see what we can learn from it. Because every day is a learning day, you know. And if, you know, if we had everything perfect, it'll be a very boring business. Like, I think, you know, we probably can at least double our turnover in the next 3 years. There's huge opportunity still. And I still have massive hunger after 30 years for the business. And so do the people that work with me. You know, our business is led from the ground up. It's not from the top down. It's led from the ground up.
And then what's been your approach to change over the years?
I mean, I'm always looking to change. You know, I mean, while I say I'm not good at digital, whatever, you know, we have, you know, we're just about to launch our own app, which we developed in-house. We're on the AI road. We've joined up with Galvia. We've got our own large language model. The learnings of that are coming through now. We've got so much information. The problem is trying to look at it and distill it down to usable chunks that we can look at. And AI has helped us hugely with that. And, you know, we've got thousands of touch points with consumers online, offline, in-store, what they're doing when they come in-store, et cetera, et cetera. And trying to make sense of that, that's the key. We carry 12,500 different SKUs in our stores. Now, not all of them, because some stores are bigger than others. But it's knowing what's selling, where it's selling, what should be grouped together, how much space, dog food needs against dog beds, against leads, collars. You know, none of it is rocket science, but you have to know it to run a successful business. And that's the key to it, really.
You're about to celebrate 30 years in the business. You're about to open your 14th store out in Mines. What were the really hard parts during the journey?
I mean, I think the the hardest part really was 2000.
Right.
When literally we went from being, you know, we thought we were going to be rich. So it's like, okay, there's red ink instead of black ink on the page. But again, like everything, you know, you have to have resilience. I mean, the most important skill, I think, in business is resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, having the, okay, you get up, things aren't going well, what are we going to do about it? You can't sit on your hands.
Yeah.
So I think that is the key to it. And out of that, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we went from 5 stores to 1. I bought the other investors out of the business, so now I own 100% of it. So in the long term, it was a better opportunity for me that came out of it. I'm still friendly with the guys. I'm still friendly with them all. We'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary. We'll all go out for dinner. Unfortunately, Sean isn't with us anymore, which is very sad. But Liam Booth, Bernard Summers, Shea Garvey, because Delta were a partner as well along the way. We'll all sit down, you know, we'll have a something nice to eat and a chat and talk about the old times and, you know, where we were, where we are and, you know, where we were. And, sorry, John Delaney was one of the directors as well, early days, he'll be there as well. So, yeah, I mean, so it is about resilience and it's about, you know, things aren't going well, we need to change. Okay, let's do it.
Do you still get the same buzz from opening each new store that you did when the original stores were true?
I think more so now. I do think more so because, you know, I was 30 years younger. I was probably, you know, a bit more arrogant than I am now. I've definitely had that, the edges knocked off me along the way. And I mean, it's more, the pleasure I get out of it is more really to, it's this team effort in Pet Stop, you know. Got some absolutely fabulous people. Our new store in Rathmines is a fabulous store. It's a new departure for us. You know, it's going to look better than we've ever done before. It's another step up. And it's all designed in-house. You know, it's project managed and designed by a girl called Katie McDonough. You know, Grace Byrne is the area manager. Shirley has been there. You know, we've got our own graphic designer in-house. So all, everything, and we work with Johnson Shopfitters. But it's all done by that team. And I'm just naming a few of them. That's not them all. You know, everybody rolls up their sleeves. Everybody gets stuck in. That, for me, is the most gratifying piece. I'll be honest with you. I love to see good stores. I want to come in. I want to make sure they're looking well. I want to make sure my customers come in. They're saying, wow, wow. This is exceptional. You know, the quality of the merchandising, the quality of the products, the value, the layout, the look and feel, the experience of the store. That's very important. But to me, it's about the team. It's about how happy they are, you know, how they feel about it. You know, they're more passionate about it, or as passionate as I am. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, if I'm settling for second best, I will, you know, get my ass kicked by them. You know, and that's the truth. It's a very flat organisation.
What's the culture then, do you think, within Pet Stop?
Well, I hope it's, you know, it's a culture of inclusion, of dignity for all, and fun. You know, I mean, pets are fun. I mean, you look at a dog, a cat, you know, jump on your head, they'll do crazy things. You know, people come in, if you ask them about their dog, you know, it's like asking about their children. They're going to smile. The first thing they'll do, they'll know what he did today or what he didn't do. Oh my God, that fella's the arm pulled off me when I'm walking or whatever, you know. So it is, we're lucky. You know, we, you know, our sort of, our catchphrase, you know, what we live by is happy pets, happy people, you know, and that is what it's all about, you know. It is about trying the best we can do every day, you know, because we are selling to a cohort of people who love animals, you know, that's why they're coming into us. And again, the people within the organization, the most important thing, they have to love animals. You know, we have dogs and cats in our offices wandering around. You know, they just, as far as they're concerned, they own the place. What are these humans doing here, you know?
There is an idea out there, you know, as you get bigger, there's a risk that the level of service falls, right? And so how do you make sure that doesn't happen?
Well, I suppose really it's about, again, it's about employing the right people. It's about instilling the right culture. You know, if I'm in a shop, like anybody else, if somebody is buying a bag of dog food, I will take it off them and carry it out to the car for them, you know. If somebody needs a delivery, if something went wrong or something like that, I'd hop into my car and deliver it to them. And, you know, I expect the same from everybody, you know. And we visit all the stores every Friday. I visit the Dublin and Kildare stores, and at least once or twice a month, I visit the stores around the country. So I walk the floor. I see what the customers are seeing, making sure everything is priced correctly, it's merchandised correctly, there's good signage, that the stores are clean, they're well lit. You know, it is about having the infrastructure right. And then hopefully, if you know, and we try to be good to our people, you know, we have, you know, medical benefits. If somebody has a problem, we will pay for their surgery within, you know, certain parameters. Yeah, but you know, they're not on a long waiting list. They can go and see a private consultant. You know, they can get sorted out quickly. We provide lunches in our store, food, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been doing that for years. And but again, it's an acknowledgement of, like, you know, people in head office, people, you know, senior management. Yeah, and we don't even have really that culture of senior management. Everybody's the same. But it's not them. Mm-hmm. It's the 200 other employees that are on the floor. Mm-hmm. That's who the customer meets when they come into the store. And they're the people that are most important in the business.
I was going to ask you the question, but I think I know the answer to it. Could you go back to the shop floor?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you miss it? Do you miss the shop floor?
I do. And as I said to you, every week I'm on it. You know, yeah. Every week I'm on it. I mean, you know, we had a very, excuse me, we had a very funny story. Just sort of after COVID had dropped off and everything was back to normal, in inverted commas. And myself and Shirley were doing our store visits on a Friday, and we're in a store in Carrick Mines. And there was a lady came in and she was looking at a dog kennel, and I said to her, "Oh, what type of a dog do you have?" And you know, I think she had a golden retriever or a Labrador. And I said, "Oh, look, that won't be big enough, because as he grows, you're going to need a bigger kennel." And the lady then went down to the back of the store and she was looking at dog food. So I went over to her, like, "What are you feeding your dog at the moment?" And she's looking at me like, "What is this guy talking to me about?" Because I had no identification that I worked in PESA, but I didn't identify myself. So we left the store. She looked at me as if I had two heads. So I said, "Okay, I leave this lady alone." And then the store manager rang us, laughing her head off, Maria, and said, "The customer had just complained that a fat man and a small lady were trying to steal her dog off her." And she said, "Well, that was the owner and the operations manager." And said, like, "Okay, well, tell him not to be following me around the store anymore." So,
Has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
Not really, because I'm an optimist. Mm-hmm. You know, I am an optimist. And, you know, and it's more, you know, I always look at things that don't go right as an opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, what can we do to make this better? You know, what can we learn from this? You know, because there's always learnings and there's always opportunities out of it. You know, I mean, definitely 2000 was a scary time, but we just dusted ourselves off and off we went and we continued on. And thankfully, you know, 25 years later, we're still here to tell the tale.
And do you obsess about the small things?
Not really, no. I don't. I mean, the good learnings, the good teachings I had were along the way where, you know, don't sweat the small things and you can't do everything yourself. It is about giving the people the opportunity to do their job properly. Give them the tools, give them the financial support, give them whatever they need. Let them do it. Because, you know, they're going to do a much better job than I am. They're much smarter than I am. So let them at it.
And when it comes to decision making, how do you make it? Are you data-based, gut feel, or a bit of both?
A bit of both. I mean, we do use data. We do analyze stuff. You know, we do look at, you know, sales per square foot, sales per linear foot, what's selling, what not selling, what trends are there. So we do try to, you know, use the data behind it to make the right decisions. And we do look at data every day. So every day I will know, are we up or down against the same day last year? How are we doing, you know, year to date? What's up, what's down? You know, do we need to do something about it? It is data driven. You know, we look at the big picture, but sometimes we do just make the decision. I mean, our store in Cork, which was our third store, and I happened to be at a wedding in Glendore, and we were looking to find a store in Cork. And I was driving back and I saw Smith's Toys just off the Kinsale Road bypass. And I thought, well, that's a big store. I wonder, you know, so I pulled in, I drove in and I knew a guy who worked in Smith's. He was a fairly senior manager there. He'd worked with me in Penny's. So I rang him. I said, "How are you getting on in Cork?" He said, "It's our number two store after Blanchardstown." I didn't need to know anything else. Mm-hmm. I drove around. There was a sign up. There was a unit to let, 3,000 square feet. And it was owned by Frankie Sheehan's father. And I rang the number and he just happened to be there at the time. So I met him. We had a chat. He asked me, you know, what do you want to do? I said, "Pet store." And he was like, as if I had two heads. Like, are you serious? And I showed him some pictures of our store in Blanchardstown. He knew Blanchardstown Shopping Centre, so that gave us great credibility. He looked at it and thought, okay, well, look, maybe this might work. So we went, had lunch. An hour later, we sat down, we shook hands on a deal. I gave him a check for the first 3 months' rent. He gave me the keys. About 5 or 6 months later, the lawyers figured out the lease and we were already up and running. And, you know, since that, you know, we're with Frank 18 years this year. Never a problem. Just pick up the phone, have a chat with him. Really good guy to do business with. And again, that was just, okay, I think we can make money here. Let's do it. And it was the right decision.
And when you're out and about driving around, are you always on the lookout for a store?
Always. Always. I mean, you know, sometimes I drive my children mad if we're away on holiday or whatever. I'm going to look at a pet store. If I've got to drive, you know, we're in the States. You know, it was a new pet could open a new store, maybe about 250 miles away from where we're staying. They went off to, not Disneyland, the other one for older kids. They went off for the day. I drove 250 miles, spent 4 or 5 hours in and out 3 or 4 times, took a load of pictures, drove back, collected them on the way home. And like, how'd you get on that? Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I had a lovely day.
What is the hardest job of being a CEO?
I suppose it's when you've got to give bad news to people, really, you know, because we are, you know, at the end of the day, we're a results driven business. You know, we do need to make money in order to expand, in order to be able to look after our staff, in order to, you know, plan for the future, et cetera, et cetera, and plan for any threats that might be out there. And it is, if people join the organization and they're just not going to fit in. And that's what it's about. In 90% of people, it's not about their ability or anything like that. It's more that they're not going to fit in with the team. And that is the key, really. That is the key. And then we've got to set them free. You know what I mean? And that can be difficult. If somebody's come to us from another job and they're not going to work out with us, that's the hardest part of it. But, you know, it's necessary. It has to be done. If not, you know, you could corrupt the whole organization. And that, you know, so it's taking those tough decisions, really. And, you know, you got to fail fast. Yeah. You know, that's the most important thing.
What have you learned from other retailers in terms of how they do it and maybe applied it to the business?
I mean, we're always on the lookout. You know, I mean, when I look at Dunn Stores and how they've pivoted their business over the years, I mean, Margaret Heffernan, Anne Heffernan, Sharon, like, they've done, I mean, they've just turned it into a phenomenal business. You know, I mean, when they started to turn off 50, I just thought, like, these guys are mad. I mean, how can they survive with the margins that are in the grocery business? But they're, you know, they're the number one in grocery. Like, the offer that they have, the quality of the product, second to none. It's better than anybody else out there by a country mile. You know, the way they've managed to sort of co-opt other brands in store, whether it's Francis Brennan, you know, whether it's Paul Costello, whether it's Sheridan Cheeses, whether it's Whelan's Butchers, you know, like, they've done an amazing job, you know, from the original, you know, Pilot High and Sell It Cheap to really phenomenal experiential stores. I mean, if you go to their flagship store, Corners Court, I mean, phenomenal. You know, I mean, it's as good as anything, you know, in the world.
And you can change the way to say versus it, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Even 12 years ago. Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal. And they're still growing. They're still adding to it. They're still improving along the way, you know. But wherever I go, I always go into stores. I always pick something up. I never come out of somewhere, you know. I never go on a trip and sort of come back and say, yeah, that was a waste. I always pick up something. And you know what? It's the things, it's the small little things that are generally the biggest impact. Absolutely, yeah. The things that you least expect to be impactful are the ones that really, okay, that really shot us.
Who have you or who do you seek advice from?
Yeah, good question. I am a bit of a loner in relation to that, you know, is the truth of it. But, you know, I read a lot of I listen to a lot of podcasts, including your own, which is brilliant, and the people
that's
you have on board.
Shout out for all those listeners. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's phenomenal. And I think, really, you know, we are a flat organisation, so I listen to my people, really, is the truth. And I listen to the customers. Mm. They're the most important, you know. But I do, I'm still very friendly with Bernard Summers, you know, who's a phenomenal business person who's had ups and downs over the years. And, you know, and a couple of other guys, you know, along the way. But I do kind of keep my own counsel, but mostly from the ground up. I listen to my own people. And I try to be out in stores, not even my own stores, in other stores, seeing what's going on. What are the trends? Yeah. What's happening? Not only in our industry, in other industries. How can we improve? How can we make the offer better? Mm. You know, it's hunger, really. The hunger is still there.
You mentioned customers, and ultimately customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product, but not necessarily telling you what the solution is to it. So how do you approach this?
You mean in terms of we get a problem with a customer, is it?
Yeah.
Well, we have a very, very simple, you know, maxim in the company is we have a no-quibble money-back guarantee. No matter what it is, we're going to fix it. No matter what happened, we're going to make it right for the customer. And, like, you know, it's how we've lived from day one. It's what I've learned from Penny's. It was Arthur Ryan's maxim as well, a no-quibbling money-back guarantee. And, you know, like, we had a situation, it's gone back probably 10 years ago, but it's, you know, it sets out why it works. You know, our store manager at the time in Carrick Mines was a lady called Paula from Brazil, and unfortunately she's gone back. When you walked into the store, her smile lit up the store. I mean, it just, wow, it was incredible. She was so lovely. She loved animals. I mean, she was just crazy, but in a really good way. And I remember she rang me one day and said, a lady had called her and said, she got home and she'd bought a lead. And when she got home, the lead wasn't there. And Paula had served her herself, had looked back over the cameras and could see that she put the lead into the bag. The lady bought a bed, a lead, a few other bits and pieces. I said, send her out a new lead. Just give her, send it out to her. Yeah, it was 10 quid or something. Mm. Just send it out to her. About 2 weeks later, the lady lifted up the dog bed. What was underneath the dog bed? The lead. She rang up Paula. She couldn't believe it. I can't believe, you know, the customer service. You obviously knew you'd given it to me, but it didn't matter. She says, like, that really is the customer is always right. And if you live by that, I mean, look, over the years, we've served millions of customers, tens of millions of customers. And, you know, if we were done by half a dozen of them, that's it. So why should you let that rule the roost for everybody else? Yeah. You know, it's minuscule in the overall scheme of things.
How do you feel about what you've already done in the company?
I mean, as I said to you, it's more what the people have done. You know, I mean, I'm very proud of what they've achieved. You know, we're a pet store. Mm. We won Retailer of the Year with Guaranteed Irish last week. We won Retail Excellence Store of the Year. You know, you're up against, you know, Brown Thomas. We're selling Louis Vuitton bags for 20 grand. We're selling pig's ears. You know what I mean? We're selling, you know, dried intestines, from sheep. And we've beaten them. And the only reason we've won that is the people. That's it. They take huge pride in what they do every day. Huge pride. And that is the secret sauce. You know, it's not me. You know, it's them. It's the people that are on the ground. That's what it's all about, really.
And then what gets more credit for the success? Luck or hard work?
It's always hard work. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, you know, the old saying, retail is detail. It is.
Yeah.
You know, it is about doing the simple things right. You know, not much has changed from, you know, you look at the likes of Walmart, you look at the likes of Penny's, you look at the likes of Dunn's. You know, it is about doing the simple things right. You have to have the doors open on time, the floors clean, the lights on, the place
stock
well...
on the shelf.
Stock on the shelves. You can't sell empty. I mean, the number of stores I've gone into where there hasn't been stock, I mean, it blows my mind. It drives me crazy. I come out of there annoyed and with somebody like, calm down, will you? Like, you know, it's not Pet Stop. You don't have to worry about it. But, you know, because of the effort, the cost that's involved in all of that, and they can't even put something out on the shelf. I mean, how you can't sell empty space. You can't do it.
I think I know the answer to this one too, but the question is, do you hire talent from outside or develop from within?
I mean, it's 95% developed from within, but we do hire people from outside as well. But like, you know, as my colleagues describe us as a boomerang company, people leave and they come back. We have the assistant manager of our store in Rat Mines, a girl called Megan, who's probably left us two or three times. I hope you don't mind me saying that, Megan. And I, every time she's going, I say, Megan, we'll see you in a few weeks' time. And, you know, and we're delighted. Delighted. You know, we have another guy who looks after our online business, Damien Rooney. And, you know, he's with us probably 22 years, 21 years. He's only young. He, you know, he's, I think he's just turned 40. And, you know, he worked, went to college, you know, lived in Canada, lived in Japan, came back, went away again, came back, you know. And, you know, and that's why it's important never to burn your bridges with people, you know, like never leave people under bad terms. If you can at all do it, because you never know what's around the corner, you know. And we're delighted to welcome back because, in fairness, they hit the ground running. There's no training. Yeah. They know from day one what they need to do, you know. And that's, we just need to let them at it. That's all. Get the roadblocks out of the way and let them do their job. Let them do their greatness, really, because that's what it's about.
And what advice would you give to young people?
I mean, I think the most important thing, you know, the people have said, follow your passion. And, you know, that's true. But in reality, you can still be passionate about it, you know, what you're doing. Do it to the best of your ability. And if you get a bit of a setback, get up, dust yourself off and keep going. You know, like, I know, you know, great businesses that have, you know, gone bust, you know, dusting themselves off, nearly gone bust. You know, guys that have, you know, failed, you know, the famous one about Bloomingdale's, I don't know how many times he went bankrupt. And eventually, you know, he opened one of the most successful department stores in the world, you know. And it is really, it is about resilience, you know, and getting up every day, showing up, doing the best you can. And it's hard. I mean, and young people would, you know, there's so many distractions now. You know, when I was growing up, everything was hard. Mm. You know, we had no money. People didn't have money. Ireland was not the country it is today. Yeah. And you had two choices. You had to do it or, you know, find something else to do. Yeah. So it is about trying to be optimistic. I mean, I think optimism is the greatest skill that people can have. Optimism and then resilience. And combine the two of them is really, really important.
Do you hate losing or love winning?
Oh, I hate losing. Oh, I hate losing. I hate it. Even now, I mean, even, you know, I still play a bit of tennis and my sons are, you know, 27 and 25 and, you know, fit. A lot fitter, a lot taller than me. I can still beat them at tennis, you know. Like my son.
Dogged determination.
Oh, absolutely, you know. No matter what I'm doing, I want to win at it, you know. Now, I don't, you know, when I lose, I don't mind. Yeah. And the great thing about sport is, you know, it teaches you how to lose. And that, to me, you know, for kids, is the most important thing. You lose, you know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. You move on. It's the next game.
Next week.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to show up and do your best, you know, and that is the key. But when I'm out there, am I trying my best? Oh, I am. Absolutely. I'll go through you if I have to.
What does the future look like for Petstop?
I think the future is very bright. I mean, as I said, I think we can at least double the size of our business over the next 3 years. I mean, there's huge opportunities. And that's, you know, like in the last year, we've opened 4 stores, which was a lot of expansion for us. And that came because Iceland pulled out of Ireland and a number of good locations became available. And we took them and it's worked out well for us. And it is about being able to take the opportunities when they arise, you know. And, you know, unfortunately at the moment with what's going on in the US, there's a lot of uncertainty and we can see it even in our sales. Our sales are pretty flat year on year, like for like. We're up obviously because we have new stores, but we've had massive growth over the last 5 years. We've more than trebled our turnover. So, you know, you've got to be realistic. But we'll still finish the year up like for like. we'll still be in positive territory. And, you know, so I think there's huge opportunities. You know, we want to do so much. We can see within the business what more we can do. And, you know, it's we haven't even scratched the surface of it yet. That's the truth.
Right, the final question. I'm opening up the book. I've no idea. Here we go. All right. This will be an interesting one. You have an opportunity now to thank someone who helped you in your career, but you never got a chance to do it. Who is that person and why?
Yeah, that's a difficult one because, you know what, there's a lot of people that I would like to thank. I suppose probably one of the most influential people in my career was Bernard Summers. And I probably have thanked him, but I don't know whether I did or I didn't. But I would definitely like to say, you know, he was phenomenal. You know, when things were tough, you know, he was, you know, back in 2000, you know, he stood shoulder to shoulder with us and helped us get through some very difficult times. You know, put his hand in his pocket when, you know, things didn't look that good, you know. And was always open, honest, and very, very reassuring. So I think, yeah. I think Bernard is the man, yeah. Bernard or Arthur Ryan, either or.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Anthony Gallagher. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.